every Arizona homeowner's best friend.
And it all has to do with you. Thanks for tuning in. It's Rosie on the House, your weekend wake-up tradition.
I talk to the tree, stop and hear what I say.
As we head on around back, we come around the circle and we find Mr. John Eisenhower sharpening his pruners this morning and getting ready to get into a little fall trimming. It is Talking Trees, second Saturday of the month, 8 o'clock hour, the outdoor living hour of Rosie on the House. You can join the conversation at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. When the auto attendant answers, just press the number one button, bypass the message. That'll put you into the studio. Text questions can be sent to 411-923, or if you want a little help with tree leaf identification, you can snap a picture and email it to info@rosieonthehouse.com. Mr. Eisenhower.
Yeah, speaking of sharpening pruning shears, you know, that's a good idea to do that. Really is. Put a nice little edge on those hand pruners or those loppers. And a little bit of oil just to lubricate them, keep them, and it makes a lot of difference. I was looking at mine the other day, and I'm ashamed to say they're pretty darn dull. You know, they've been used, and I forget to get put a good edge on them. You know, but it's really nice to take a little extra, a few minutes, just like takes better to invest a few minutes in sharpening a tool than to use it. You know, swinging with a dull axe is just a waste of time. You know,
and it leaves a lot nicer, cleaner cut on the tree.
Absolutely.
Don't end up with it half broken off or peeling off additional bark you weren't planning on. Or
5 minutes, of time put in on sharpening a nice axe will save you 20 minutes cutting that piece of wood or that tree down.
It's a little easier on your hands too.
A little easier on your hands.
Yeah, well, my special guest, Sarah Maitland, just chimed in. Sarah is a consulting arborist who works with our company, and she's just an amazing friend and a partner, not in crime, in arboriculture.
Now, are arborists like wildfire hotshots? Do you have to send arborists to the Gulf Coast now? Because they got a mess of downed trees right now this morning. I'm telling you that for sure.
Yeah, no, they do put out an APB to all the arborists.
Do they really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. The main tree trade associations put out a message to all. In advance of these hurricanes, we had a big notification that came down when the big storm hit the northeast a few months ago. And, yeah, we get tree services all over the country that can converge on those areas to try to help out, dig them out. Yeah, because it does take a lot of special skills to be able to safely remove trees from power lines and from homes and get people dug out from these big storms.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yes, sir.
Which we haven't had any of here in Arizona. We're under our annual raindrop. And your talking points here just about the long, hot, extended summer.
Yeah, we haven't had much rain at all. It's been a monsoon, if there ever was one. And, it's not just the excessive heat that we had this summer, but now it's the persistent heat. These plants that have been struggling, you keep waiting for that reprieve. We talked a little bit about it last month, where the little bit cooler temperatures really help our trees have a kind of a little renaissance. But this has been amazing. Since last month, it's been continually hot. Deep into October is when you're not normally seeing 100-degree days. But it is, not uncommon. We get these every now and then, but this is one of those years, and it's really taken a toll. We were talking a little bit about just the pine trees. There's one that we saw yesterday that we did some work in, and it's just a shame that these big old Aleppo pines, which are one of the biggest trees in our local landscape here in Phoenix, to see those start declining and dying is really troublesome.
And it seems like if they're going back when replanting a pine, they're switching them all to Afghan.
Yeah, the Afghans are a really popular replacement tree, and they do they grow a little faster, a little more predictable in their shape and size. And they're a beautiful replacement tree for pines. I like them a lot.
We have a lot of other trees being affected by the heat. We've had a lot of mites just taking down bottle trees. And the Brazilian peppers are just kind of melting. The queen palms are really struggling with the heat. And that's a long-term issue with our climate change.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of just damage to trees. And as Sarah's pointing out, then insects are a secondary issue too. And what we in our industry, we have a term we refer to as a mortality spiral. And that is when a plant begins to, due to various factors, start to decline. And at every turn of that mortality, that downward mortality spiral, different factors are coming into play. For instance, you've got excessive heat, some defoliation as a result, leading to some sunburn. Now that the tree has less foliage to protect itself from the sun gets into the bark, into those major areas of the trunk and some of the main stems. Once that bark is sun damaged, it can't conduct water and nutrients. So the canopy thins out even further. So you get this vicious cycle of sunburn, thinning canopy, more sunburn, thinning canopy. And then the insects come in, the flat-headed borers, for instance. They attack that dead wood. And before you know it, these trees are pretty deep in that mortality spiral. It's pretty hard to pull them out at that point. But we don't like to see that. Once arborists can kind of come in and diagnose those issues, but hopefully we've done it at an early enough stage in that mortality spiral that we can improve the growing conditions, maybe put some shade cloth on a tree to prevent that late afternoon sun from causing any further damage. And sometimes you can pull those trees out of that mortality spiral and get them back to good health.
And you, when you're talking about sunburn, it seems like you're a more of a fan of wrapping some kind of shade cloth around the tree as opposed to, you know, one of the tree paints.
I am, yeah. The tree paint is nice to have as sort of a secondary measure. But it isn't really a sunblock. It only lowers the surface temperature at the bark by a degree or two. So if you're talking about 100, and if the tree is going to be susceptible to burning at 110 degrees, and you're only reducing that by a degree or two, you're really not significantly helping the tree. We prefer putting a piece of shade cloth over the entire canopy of the tree. That allows a little bit of sunlight to get in to keep the photosynthesis active, so the tree can continue to grow, but yet providing a little bit of shade just takes the edge off that. That would reduce the surface temperature to the trunk, you know, significantly, 5 to 10 degrees as opposed to just a 1 or 2 degrees.
Putting that shade cloth over the entire canopy of the tree, you know, it's basically, you know, what we see during the wintertime when everyone puts their blankets out over their trees.
The frost cloth.
It's a complete opposite of a sun cloth.
That's right. And if you got a larger tree and you can't put a shade cloth over the entire tree, then you could wrap individual branches with a burlap wrap. There's some burlap wrap available, or a tree wrap is available in some of the hardware stores as well. And that's another method. The problem with that is it actually can keep small sprouts from emerging from those bark surfaces. So there's some drawbacks to using just a tree wrap. And, you know, of course, you need to be careful you don't wrap it so tight that it starts to girdle some of those branches. You don't want to leave it on for years, year after year. What we prefer to do is once the sun starts dropping a little lower in the sky in the late fall, winter, pull the wrap off, let the tree have a break. And then again, if you need to in the spring, you can rewrap it again.
If left alone, many of the trees will naturally grow and to shade themselves and their own bark. But what do? We come around every year or twice a year and we cut it up so we've got, you know, a different shape and a different style and something to walk underneath. You know, we don't let it grow its own natural sunscreen.
Right. And you don't want to do that to citrus especially. A lot of people want to make your little shrub-like citrus tree look more like a tree. So you start limbing up and taking all those lower branches off so you can see more of the trunk. Just be careful that you don't do that. You want to have enough of a canopy of branches that it will shade the trunk with those branches. So.
And the fruit's easier to get.
And the fruit is better. The lower, big, heavy branches are the best fruit.
I I never heard that one before.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's where you want to develop your canopy, and that's where you get really good fruit.
That's your juicing oranges down there.
Yeah, you can have it up off the ground, but let it shade the roots, and those lower branches are really productive.
Excellent. Yeah, I was going to say we got a little bit of other tree tips we want to talk about today. We got some pruning tips and some frost. Want to talk a little bit about frost damage and a lot about lawns, about reducing your water. Got some fertilization, got some planting recommendations. So where do you want to start, Rome?
You know, let's just real quick touch on the tree of the month before we jump into all the other to-dos. I've not heard of the canyon hackberry.
Well, it is a very cool plant, and I'm going to let Sarah kind of take the lead on this because she's has some expertise in the Celtis reticulata.
Oh, it's a very, very fun tree. And for the first 8 or 10 years of its life, it has a smooth bark. And then it starts to develop these really knotty little nodules. And it's really a nice bark until it reaches the 30-inch size, and then the bumps disappear on the lower trunk. But you can see this tree in nature. You go down around the border of Mexico at Sasabi. They're 30-inch trunks, and they just live without any natural water. And they're magnificent. And they got a little bit of a papery, kind of a scratchy leaf to it. But it's a big leaf, and they are native most of the western states, from Texas all the way across the western things, mostly in riparian areas. So they do require a little bit of summer irrigation if you want to keep them doing well. Really good for wildlife, a lot of berries. And they grow pretty moderately, but more on the slow size.
What's a typical size that you'd see in someone's yard?
You know, you see them usually around a 10 or 12-inch trunk is what I've been seeing. And they're just not used well enough. And it's usually a secondary tree in a yard, but it can really be a prominent tree. They're kind of funky, weird in their shape, so it's not an upright lollipop. But they do fit into the landscape well.
Yes. Now, you said they down by the border. You know, that's a lot higher elevation than Phoenix and
Correct.
Tucson. Can you bring those into the lower desert elevation and get a 30-inch trunk out of them?
Well, we were trying to decide, you know, talking this morning, if we've even seen them at nurseries locally. And you don't see them that often, but I think that they're going to be more commonly found in a little bit higher elevations. Some of the high desert here in town, the Cave Creek Carefree area, they grow naturally.